Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and we had a guest cancel for the show today because they had some things occur with their business. And I was fortunate enough to get a lovely woman, Dr. Melody Ivory, who is my guest today. And I've been telling you about her the past few days with the show that she was going to be replacing Mr. Tony Richards. And she is a woman that has just had an absolutely amazing life. She is a woman who dared to be different. She dared to take on the challenge of shifting into an environment that maybe 5 or 10 years ago or 15 years ago, she would never have thought. She would have even given consideration. I'm going to welcome to the show Dr. Melody Ivory. Thank you for being with me today.
Thank you so much, Donna, for having me. I feel truly honored to be on the show with someone who is a woman after my own heart, committed to empowering people and your enlightened guests. So thank you for having me.
You're welcome, by the way. I really enjoyed your material that I received. One, I thought it was elegantly done.
Thank you.
But two, you have a powerful story of your own that you have to share. And I think it's so important for us to come from that space where we're not afraid to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and to be able to let people know that tough times happen and that we have choices about how we're going to handle those tough times. And I'd love for you to share your personal story because your journey has some interesting twists and turns to it.
It is, and I would call it a journey of healing. I think that's what it represents most, is a journey of healing and needing to heal without even knowing I needed to heal. In other words, I believe that I have been exposed to violence, even in the womb, through my mother and the relationships that she had with my father at the time of conception, and then as early as I can remember, even being 2 years old, being exposed to violence through my stepfather and witnessing him on a daily basis, basically stripping her naked and beating her up and down the street for all to see. So that was my early childhood is being a witness to this, but also experiencing it on such a level that I didn't have words to express and being affected by it and colored. And to the point where she actually felt that she needed to leave that situation. And so she left when I was 6 years old, and I haven't seen her again. I don't know if she's alive or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then going through the same thing with my father after she left and being shifted to live with my father and having him, you know, same thing, witnessing extreme violence with him beating my brother with an extension cord and going into foster care, being separated from both my mother, father, and brother for a period of time of a month. Those were my earliest foundation. By the time I was 7, that's what I had experienced, and that was my reality at 7 years old, being without parents and becoming part of a system.
Mm-hmm.
And going on from there through the foster care system, and despite all that I went through, being able to graduate valedictorian from my high school class and go on to college. I basically ran away to college. A lot of people go to college or may even dread going to college. But for me, college was a way to get out of my circumstances. I discovered probably around the time I was about 10 years old that I was really smart and really creative. And I decided that was going to be my pathway to get out of my situation. And so I went on to Purdue University, became a single parent my second year, but went on to graduate with a double major in honors computer science and mathematics, and then moved on to University of California at Berkeley and ultimately despite an attention deficit disorder that I wasn't really aware of, but I knew mm-hmm. I had challenges. But despite that, I was able to become the first African-American woman to earn a PhD in computer science at Berkeley. And then from there, come into Seattle and became a professor at the University of Washington in Seattle in the computer and information science department. Did really well. However, my second year, I contracted meningitis and went through a near-death experience with that. And that really woke me up and reminded me that I'm not really here to teach about the outer technology, but mm-hmm. to teach about the inner technology and to help us, women in particular, to rewrite our human software. And that's why I left academia in 2005 and has been on this journey of healing and helping others to come along with that.
Would you share with us what your near-death experience was?
Well, when I contracted meningitis, basically I know meningitis is a condition that attacks your spinal cord, your brain, mm-hmm. and excruciating pain. And basically I was pretty much unconscious for several days. And it's also a condition that you can die from. A lot of people die from. I lost a childhood friend to meningitis. And a lot of adults die from it as well. Mm-hmm. And for me, I don't even remember. There's like days in my life I don't even remember. All I know, I was in the hospital completely, I don't know if it was unconscious or just in some state they had me where I had no consciousness at all. You know, didn't know who mm-hmm. was around, didn't know what day, what time, or any of that. So it wasn't like it was a tragic accident. It was more the potential and the threat and that and realizing afterwards, wow, my life was not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. And there was no guarantee that I was going to come through this particular situation. And all I know is that many people have died from this, but I didn't. And obviously there's something more for me to do.
Those experiences are so significant because we know of people that have not survived them.
Yes.
So this feeling that you had that I need to do something with my life, there has been all of this drama, all of this that I've grown up with, all of this that I've conquered, all of this that I have been able to stand tall against. And then something like this, it really does make you wonder. There are so many people that I have spoken with through the years that have said that has been a particular instance that has turned their life around. And whether it is a near-death experience like you had where you could have died from this situation, or it was something that maybe they observed. And it was so profound that in a split second, their whole mentality shifted. And it really is, it's a fascinating phenomena because people would look at you and wonder why in the world you would choose to leave a positioning that could be tenured, why you would choose to step away from what would be perceived as security.
yeah, that's really funny. What I learned is that there's a cost with that security. Before I became a professor, I knew that wasn't the road for me. I felt like I had two lives. I had the academic life, and I had the personal growth, empowerment, speaker, motivator, mentor life. Mm-hmm. And I tried to walk both of those roads at the same time. And when I became a professor, especially knowing that it would take all of me, I would look at my advisors at Berkeley and the other professors. I was like, I can't do that. They work way too hard. You know, I had a son, mm-hmm. and I had other interests. And it's like you give your whole life. I'm talking 70, 80 hours a week of working because it was University of Washington is a research institution, which means it's not just teaching classes, but you have a research program with students. You write papers. You write grant proposals. And I'd done well with all of that. In 4 years, in 3 years, I had done everything for tenure. And had I stayed, they would have gave it to me early because mm-hmm. they didn't want me to leave. I was one of their star professors. But what I knew is that, for me, contracting meningitis and having it attack my brain to the point that I could no longer use it, which is really my bread and butter. I at the end of the day, I get paid to think.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to think, to me, that was like a clear sign, wait a minute, you're not using your brain the way you're meant to use it. And what that means is I'm one of these people who's equally left brain and right brain. But mm-hmm. when as an academic, and especially in technology and computer science, I was only using half of my brain. And at the same time, this path I was walking, I was only using half of my potential to empower people. Sure, I got to do it with the students. Sure, I got to do it with the other staff and the professors. But what about the public classroom? I wasn't doing it in the public classroom. And that experience reminded me that don't get too comfortable. Don't mm-hmm. get too secure. There's a bigger classroom that you're meant to be in.
I think that's quite a profound awareness, because in my perception, life experience is a classroom experience, no matter mm-hmm. where you are. I talk with people from all kinds of economic backgrounds, all kinds of cultural, social environments, and every single human being on this planet is, in my view, including myself, we're in a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we reach a point where if we wake up, we say, just like you did, wait a minute, what is it that I really need to do? Now, you decided that you were going to write poetry, and I'm fascinated with the fact that it took you a number of years to gain confidence in yourself. And I want you to share that story, but before you do, I want to just read a little bit of your poetry, and your book is beautifully designed,
thanks,
just exquisitely designed. I love the illustrations in it, the way it's laid out. I think you just did a phenomenal job. This is under Season of Change.
Mm.
Deafened by the thunder, blinded by the rain, confused and paralyzed by the earthquakes and hurricanes. Just another disaster? Or will this be your season of change? Fantasies unmanifest, destructions, your fame and glory. Little Red Riding as if it was a Cinderella story. Riding to where? A bridge too far to cross? Looks like a calamity, not just a simple loss. Now, that's just a smidgen of this poem. And I read it, and I feel the soul, if you will, that goes behind the words, because you're talking about your own life's walk that you've experienced. Why was it so tough? You got slammed by so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Who, what, where, when, and why?
You know, it's really interesting that you picked that poem. There's such a story behind that. It's related to the question you asked me about doing poetry and why it took me so long to gain the confidence. When I was in graduate school, I finished my master's, and I couldn't get my advisor to read it. He said the PhD students were more important. I interpreted it as I'm not important, because I had this lifelong issue with my own sense of self-worth because of my background.
Mm-hmm.
So the response to that in 1996 was I wrote a book of poetry called Rap Lyrics for My Beloved Black People, and I went on tour because, for me, I needed to be comfortable in my own black skin.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote that book, and I went on tour. And as I was on tour, I met this guy, and essentially, I allowed him and others to convince me that I was no good as a poet. I didn't understand at the time that there's no rule for poetry. We can create our own style. There's no rule. There's no right or wrong. So I believed them, and I walked away from my poetry. And it took me 8 years to write another poem. It took me 10 years to perform again. And it took me 13 years to complete this poem, Season of Change. That was the poem that I was writing as I walked away from my poetry. And 13 years later, I completed it and performed it in my one-woman show last year called The Road M Travels.
So amazing. That's
yes.
Amazing.
Yes. Yeah, so I was like, well, of all the poems, you picked that one. Really interesting. I was having a conversation with myself. That was in, for me, that was me discovering initially how healing poetry can be, mm-hmm. not just for myself and writing it and sharing it, but also for the people who are experiencing it, hearing it, listening, taking it into their bodies. And despite that power, and I was actually really good at poetry. I never studied it, never had a class in performance. Right off the bat, I naturally was doing poetry, and it was a skill I never even knew I had.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked away from it.
It's so fascinating because I've been guilty of it. I think just about everyone is on one level or another. What we feel so comfortable with, what comes to us and is a gift that we've been given in this life experience is so easy to do, we don't seem to value it. We think we have to beat ourselves up to be Miss or Mr. Perfect. And it's amazing when we find out what we do, what people see in us, or what we just have such a joy about doing, and we're able to do it. It's exciting. It really, really is exciting. And what you are doing, a one-woman show, going on the road, performing, writing poetry, speaking to the hearts and minds of people wherever you go, this was backed by a tremendous amount of discipline that you acquired through your life's experience to that point. This must just absolutely make you feel so rich inside because you've had this self-discovery.
Absolutely. I, believe it or not, I had to grow into being able to embrace my own gift. And that's the challenge we all have. It's mm-hmm. not just the ease of it, but it's also being able to accept that, oh, this is a gift. And yes, this is what I'm meant to do. And have the confidence, as you say, instead of questioning ourselves. Because that's the thing that gets in the way, is we question, oh, well, you know, just because it's easy doesn't mean it's good. And right. So as I've learned to step into my gifts and embrace them and share them, and I have been able to do some miraculous things, not just for myself, but for other people. For instance, 2 weeks ago, I did a poetry healing workshop that was funded by the City of Seattle's Office of Arts and Cultural Affairs. And I was able to have 14 women there using performance poetry, teaching them how to write with ease, the same way that I can write. I've taught them my method, and I have 100% success rate having them use that method. And then also, when they perform, here's the thing that people don't know. I know when people step up to the microphone to perform, I know exactly what's going on with them, and I call it out. And they get to deal with it through the context of their poem and their performance, and they can have healing and transformation right in the moment. That, to me, is phenomenal.
I agree. I think that is absolutely marvelous. Now, I want to share one other of your poems. This is titled The Truth of Me, because it's relative to what we're discussing. Rummaging through the closet of my mind, searching and searching, but have yet to find the truth of me. Although I know it is in there, a garment I want so desperately to wear, just hiding from me. I quickly discard a few remnants from my past and toss some borrowed and donated pieces out fast, but still, the truth evades me. I haven't made the slightest scratch nor dent, 'cause the clutter and garbage is omnipresent, deeply bearing the reality of me. I hastily decide to throw it all away, realizing that none of it came here to stay, just a temporary illusion of me. I found what I need in the closet's core. Now I don't have to search no more, and I can be free. Those words express with such clarity what you discovered and what you were just discussing.
Yes.
And I think that is a lovely way to be able to touch somebody's mind and spirit. And that's what your book, The Road M Traveled, does. It allows people to share part of your journey in their own private space with this lovely book and to be able to absorb the words. I think that is what the magic of poetry is.
Absolutely.
It's sharing that space.
Absolutely. It's, and the thing is you can take it in and personalize it for yourself. As I'm listening to you read it, I was like, wow, I don't read my poetry that way. But as mm-hmm. I'm listening to you reflect back and internalize it and express it in your own way, I was like, isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm.
That we can take it in and we can take those words and transform them and express them in our own way, but still deliver the same message.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful.
And I think it's important. I think that's what poetry does.
Yes.
I think you can have 10 people in a room, hand each one of them the poem, and if you ask them to read it, they will read it. They will have enunciations in certain thing, in certain flows of words. They'll enunciate in that particular way, and it gives a meaning that just someone reading it straight, period, without any feeling at all, you wouldn't get it. You wouldn't get it.
No, absolutely. And you read it so beautifully. I could just sit here all day and listen to you read.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So
I appreciate it.
Your listeners are just so privileged to this amazing voice and presence that you share with them on such a regular basis.
You have, and thank you very much for that beautiful compliment, you have something that I think is absolutely outstanding. And I love the fact that it's on like a little magnet card, or you could use it as a coaster. It's laminated. It's called the Self-Allegiance.
And Pledge of Self-Allegiance.
The Pledge of Self-Allegiance. I really like this. When I saw this, it grabbed me so fast. And I want to read it to the listeners because this is something, if you just, I don't care whether you're male or female, it doesn't make any difference. This is a pledge that if it were taught to children and given to them with the understanding that who they are does make a difference, wow, this is just amazing. And this is how it reads. I pledge allegiance to myself. I stand firmly rooted, planted in this fertile soil. This miraculous existence I am blessed and grateful to call me. I embrace my lightness, darkness, mountain highs, valley lows, all my experiences in between. I bring fully who I am, all that I hope and secretly desire to be, to the universal table of life. I take my seat, claim my rightful place as a unique, worthy, and divinely ordained human spirit being. These are magnificent words. These, and the way you've done it, it could be given to anyone, any cultural background. This is a statement of the self that makes, in my view, a relationship to life itself. This is something I think what you've done here is just absolutely marvelous. When you wrote this out, was there a particular experience that motivated you to express these words in this way?
Oh, yes. I went through a very difficult challenge where the question came up, am I going to define myself for myself? Who am I going to allow to define myself? And I think that was a recurring theme. It was the same reason why I walked away from poetry. And I had another situation that made me say, you know what, I have to define myself for myself. And that starts with making this pledge to myself. We pledge our allegiance to everything. We're asked to pledge it to the country. We're asked to pledge it to our families, to our jobs, everything but ourselves. But the truth is, I cannot give the best of me if I'm not taking care of myself first. It's not about selfishness. It's about self-care, self-love, self-acceptance, self-expression. And that pledge was me saying to myself, okay, I am going to put myself first. I am going to define myself for myself. It started with writing that pledge. What am I promising to myself? And you shared the first verse. For myself, I needed even more. I have several other verses, but I just shared the first verse in a lot of cases. And what I did after I wrote that is I said I need to anchor this with a symbol, and that's the graphical symbol that you see on the coaster. Yes, so I anchored it with a visual. And I would stand in the mirror every day and read that to myself. And it's funny, actually, I just started going back to this pledge and reading it every day, too, because it's like, you know, this is a lifelong commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what is going on and how busy I get, I need to remember to put myself first. I need to remember and come back to this pledge, because as you read this all the time, you start taking action that's consistent with it. And that's what the pledge is about. To me, the pledge is an active commitment.
I think that so often we women, because of how we're indoctrinated when we come up in society, depending on where we are in the world and what those societal paradigms are, that self-sacrificing image is just unbelievably strong. Mm-hmm. And yet, as you've just said, if we don't take care of ourselves, if we do not have a sense of kindness towards ourselves, thoughtfulness, if we're not willing to invest in ourselves, then we're going to lose.
Yeah.
And every time I think of those women I've known that have been self-sacrificing, and I can even put myself on that list at times, when you do that, there may be appropriate moments for it, but when you do it to the point where you lose your identity, where you just fizzle out and you become weary and you're brain dead, in a sense, emotionally empty, then that's the time where you need to say, okay, it's time for me.
Yeah.
And this pledge, I just think, is absolutely fabulous. I really think that what you've done here is incredible.
Dr. Ivory, you've reached into a world
that keeps expanding for yourself. And I know that it sends you into moments of frustration at times, but you're really happy with what you're doing. What would you say to those men and women that are listening that say, oh, well, she was lucky. She was a professor. She's got the education. She's got this. She's got that. Oh, she just is a lucky person. What would you say to that person?
First of all, I'd laugh. and that is a common misperception of me. People think I was born with this silver spoon in my mouth. And what I say is, at the end of the day, no matter what I've been through, the realization I've come to is that we are all living works of art. And just as Michelangelo chipped and sculpted and sanded and blasted away everything that wasn't the statue David, we have to do the same thing for ourselves. And when we do that, we truly can be the living work of art, be the masterpiece that we're meant to be. And in doing that, we can truly contribute what we're here to contribute in the world, not just to ourselves, but to others, too, and make a difference and leave a legacy.
I think you have said that very, very well. And I think the concept of leaving a legacy that you have started building your legacy, and it will become richer and richer as your years expand. And when we can look at it that way, when we can say, this is the kind of legacy I want to leave.
Yes.
This is what if I were to be remembered for something, this is how I would want to be remembered. And pass it on. And
yes.
You're doing it with your speaking, you're doing it with your writing, and your performances that you are doing across the country. I just think it's wonderful. Now, for those of you listening, go to her website, melodyivory.com, MelodyIvory.com, and you'll find out more about this wonderful woman who was very gracious enough to step in when my one guest wasn't able to make it, because she truly is a virtuoso of change. And her book is something that you could tuck, ladies, into your purse. You could share it with friends if you get together once a month or whenever, or maybe with someone in your family, whether they're young, middle-aged, or elderly. You can share it with them and read the poems out loud. Some of them will make you cry a little bit. Others will give you a deep sense of thoughtfulness within yourself. And I want to thank you, Dr. Ivory, for being with us today. It's been absolutely a joy having you. I hope that when you come out with your next book, you'll send that one along to me as well.
I absolutely will. And thank you so much, Donna, and your enlightened guests. It was my pleasure.
It's a joy having you, and I know you'll have continued success in all that you do. The book is titled The Road M Traveled, and Dr. Melody Ivory, go to her website, melodyivory.com. You'll find out a lot of information about her. She's available for speaking, and this coaster on self-reliance, you need to get that, if nothing else. You need to get that self-reliance statement, because it is going to nourish your mind, your soul, your spirit with the right kind of thinking, because we all are a work in progress. And as she said, we can become masterpieces surpassing our own expectations, just as she has done. Dr. Ivory, again, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We will be back in just a moment. Don't go away. More good things to share.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are open. And if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I would be delighted to have you give me a buzz. All I need from you is your first name or your initial. Call into the number 888-815-9756. Now, by the way, I know St. Paddy's Day is coming around, and I have to chuckle. Every time this holiday comes around, you always see beef brisket everywhere. And I can remember walking into one store just a couple of days ago. I have never seen so much beef brisket in my life. Most of the time, it's pretty hard to find. But boy, when it comes around to this season of the year, it is a popular, popular dish on St. Paddy's Day, which is coming up on Thursday. So I have got a beer-braised corned beef with cabbage and carrots, a traditional Irish dish. I'm going to give you the recipe for that. So have a piece of paper and a pen if you'd like to get a copy of it, and I will share that with you later on. Meanwhile, I want to let you know about the guests that are going to be coming up. this week. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about a legal case. Susan G. Baer is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about her publication, The Inventor's Fortune. Now, this is a fascinating story about a multi-million dollar legacy that was left in a trust, and how the person that left this trust, who was an inventor of what we would call the expansion bracelet. It's fascinating history. He did not have any children of his own, so it's really a lesson in working with trusts, but the story, it was a six-year journey before it was resolved, and the story is just fascinating. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And then, of course, on St. Paddy's Day, we've got to have a wee bit of the Irish and the unique. So we're going to be talking about the Glamis Cure. Yes, Wade Nichols is going to be my guest. That's going to be a lot of fun. Friday is going to be a very significant day. We have one of the top heart cardiologists that's going to be on air with us, Dr. Lundell. He has got the cure for heart disease. Now, this is not being said lightly. This is a physician who has operated on thousands and thousands of patients when they have gone into major heart arrest and they have to do a bypass or put stents in or whatever would be necessary at the time to save a person's life. There is a cure for heart disease. He, as a cardiologist, said, I've found this out. I'm passing it along because the people in America and elsewhere need to know about it. So he's going to be my guest. I was talking with his assistant earlier this afternoon, and I'm really looking forward to this. So the cure for heart disease is on Friday. We have such wonderful people. We have such dynamic individuals in this world. And I'm so pleased that they have been able to put something to paper, a book. I hear people saying, oh, books are going to disappear. You know, they said that 10 years ago when I came out with my award-winning children's book. I was listening to all of these doomsdayers. Well, books are still selling like crazy. I know we've got the Kindle and we've got all kinds of things that are out there electronically. But a book you can carry with you everywhere you go. So the electronic media that's being introduced is wonderful. But those books are still going to be there and they're still going to be treasured. And I am just so pleased that there are so many people that are in a position to be able to communicate effectively their stories and their experiences, like Dr. Ivory today, because it makes a difference. And you never know when you're going to pick up something that's really going to be especially meaningful to you and where it is going to change your life. I thought I'd share a little bit of trivia with you. How about talking about a mad king? Ah, yes, the mad king of Bavaria. Now, this was in the 1800s. In June, in fact, it was the 12th of June in 1886, that mad King Ludwig II of Bavaria was locked up in his Schlossberg palace. Who declared him insane? His cabinet, and the prince that was going to be his heir. Now, when they went to arrest him, they had a little bit of a difficult time getting to him because there were 40 quarts of beer, 10 bottles of champagne, and a 7-course feast that got in their way. Then they were waylaid by loyal local police and peasants, but finally they captured King Ludwig on the very next day. And there was a psychiatrist, Bernard von Guden, that said he had evidence documenting that the monarch hid behind curtains at court balls, had mood-like picnics, danced strangely, pulled his beard when he was excited, bowed to a holy tree, and had an insane brother. Now, I don't know about you, but I'd say something was done with the psychiatrist. Who knows? Maybe he was bribed, paid off, because they needed to get this guy out of his positioning. So they were using whatever they could, but lots of people will honor a holy tree. I mean, it's being done today. Pulling your beard when you're excited, is that unusual? How many people do you talk to that's ever had a beard that they're not pulling at that beard? Or maybe their ear? That reigns for the term of, or the description of insanity? Dancing strangely? Well, there's a lot of people that really don't dance well. In moonlight picnics? I know of a lot of ladies that would enjoy a few of those. And hiding behind curtains at court balls? Who knows? Maybe the event was a little intimidating to him, and maybe he just wanted to check somebody out. You never know. So anyway, an insane brother, That was a given. So they said he was. Now, he was eccentric. He was a real odd duck. He loved beauty, loved music, and I'll tell you the rest of the story about this man because it's an interesting one, and it has a mystery about it that has never been solved. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
My name is Sylvia. I'm calling in from Toronto, Canada.
Hi, Sylvia. Welcome to the show. Well, first thing I'm looking at with you, and excuse me, I think we've got a little bit of a time delay, so I'll have to take a deep breath so I don't talk over you. Just keep that in mind. One of the things that I'm looking at right off the bat is you're sort of on the fence and feeling as if you're in a precarious situation. You're trying to keep your balance. And I want to say you can get off the fence whenever you want and just take some time to think about what is going to be necessary for you in your mind to maintain a balance in your life. I think there's too many people with too many opinions that are having an influence on you, and for some reason you don't trust yourself. And I want you to know, trust yourself, period. You're fully capable of making your choices clearly and with very much specific purpose and direction in mind, and be able to get back up on a fence of action, doing a perfect balancing act so that you walk that thin line into the direction you really want to follow. I believe that the regurgitation of the past that you've been finding yourself go through has been necessary because you need to be able to clean out some of the trash. And that takes being mindfully present about how you're thinking and what you're doing. So this is a good time for you. It may be agitating. It may be irritating because you feel like you don't have it all together the way you would like. Don't worry about that. Take a little bit of time for yourself. Closet yourself away. Really have the clarity, because once you get your clarity, there's not going to be any way of stopping you. There's going to be no way of stopping you. It is very important you do this for yourself. You are going through, I feel, a major breakthrough that allows you to enter into the space you really want to be in, because it's the right place for you to be. So I compliment you, and I know it can be exceedingly frustrating, very frustrating when you go through this, but have patience with yourself. It's going to take you a little bit longer to get all the I's dotted and the T's crossed the way you know they need to be. But once you have that clarity, it's full steam ahead. And I think June is really a breakthrough month for you. What would you like to ask me today?
I think you answered a lot.
Oh, well, that's good. What did I answer for you?
I'm sorry?
What did I answer for you?
I heard somebody describe the phase that she was in that matched mine, which was being liminal.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it's a Jungian term of, you know, you're finishing off things and you're starting something. You're starting a new course or a shift,
mm-hmm,
or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been sidetracked a little bit because of a car accident, and mm-hmm, it wasn't that the injury was, you know, horrendous or whatever. It was just that it sort of made me stop in my momentum, and it, mm-hmm, made me wait about. It happened about 14-15 months ago, so I had to adjust to a new physical normal, because it was basically a whiplash, but, mm-hmm, but it had more effect on me because of some previous things I had.
Oh, sure.
And I've been wanting to be a writer, and, you know, part of the pain of dealing with the physical sort of shut the creative down. And I have some great ideas, but I just can't seem to get the inspiration that I need to keep going, and every now and then it comes in, but mm-hmm. mostly it seems to be eluding me. So, I think
well, let me make a suggestion to you, and that is, with the writing, go ahead and continue to write, because you are having to go through this. You've just been detoured for a little while, that's all. And all of it, just like the guest I had on earlier, all of this is going to show itself in its own particular way. And when it does show itself, it's going to surprise you. It really is. You're going to realize that 15-month, 16-month, whatever it's going to end up being, was a distraction but a necessary one to enable you to focus on your physical wellness, to bringing yourself back into balance. And then other things will fall into place, too. But continue your writing. Don't stop your writing.
Right. Well, that seems to be the thing that draws me towards the future, because otherwise I know that we're supposed to be present-focused,
mm-hmm.
but I seem to be more past-focused.
Well, you know, that's part of the journey, though, dear,
yeah.
And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But you need to be able to write about it. And I think writing, when you have this stuff regurgitating, if you can sit down and write it out and write out your feelings, put everything down, then it's like you're going to be able to release it because you've documented it. You don't have to own it anymore. It's been documented.
Right.
You can let it go.
And that's the journaling.
Yes.
It'll
come in handy. It'll come in handy. A lot of things will happen. You just go ahead and keep your writing. Just keep doing it.
Thank you.
And you'll have to send me your book when it's done.
It's scripts, actually. Might be movies.
Hey, that's even better. That's wonderful.
Which might be even better. Thank you. I really enjoyed the guest that you just had, Dr. Ivory.
Yes.
And I just thought her that Pledge of Allegiance was just outstanding.
Isn't it marvelous? Go to her website, melodyivory.com.
Oh, yeah. It was such an affirming statement that it was just something I'm going to go look at that now, too.
Wonderful. I appreciate your call, my dear. And you've got a wonderful journey ahead of you. Enjoy the ride.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You.
This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break. When I come back, I'll finish Ludwig's story. And if you want to talk to me, 888-815-9756. And don't forget that pad of paper and pen for the recipe. Aha! St. Patty's is coming up. You don't want to miss it. But just be back in a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-815-9756. Quick like a bunny, I want to let you know, those of you that are listening in the state of Washington, that I'm going to be appearing at the Emerald Spiral Expo. Now, that's on March the 26th. It's a one-day event. I'll be there with books and also doing mini consultations. This is an event that's marvelous. If you want to walk into an environment where you can enjoy beauty of products and services and personal interaction with a lot of talented people, this is the place to do it. And do step by my booth and say hello. I would love to meet you. Also, go to emeraldspiral.com where you'll find out all of the specific details regarding this wonderful event. That's emeraldspiral.com. Check it out. Okay, I told you I would finish the story about the Mad King of Bavaria. And before we got our caller, I was telling you how he was rather eccentric, and he really drained the coffers of Bavaria's treasury quite thoroughly. Now, he absolutely loved Richard Wagner, or Wagner, as it is properly pronounced, and he would just do anything and everything to support this brilliant composer. He would go on midnight mountain rides, and he had this magnificent gilded sleigh that were pulled by four white horses. He had extravagant theater productions that he would have staged, but he was the only one able to watch it. And one time, a sentry looked tired, so he sent the sofa out to the sentry so the sentry could rest. And he, at one time, was engaged to a cousin by the name of Sophia, but he escaped that marriage. Then he really got a brilliant idea. He was going to build castles. Nicole, of course, these castles are just absolutely spectacular. And he finished three of them and three more, including a Chinese palace and a Byzantine palace, had entered the planning stages. So he was on a roll. Well, when he was arrested, King Ludwig and the psychiatrist Gudin took two strolls around the local lake. Now, on the first stroll, there were two people that accompanied them. But on the second, they were all by themselves. They didn't return by dinner time. An alarm was set out, and the castle staff, armed with torches, searched the grounds. And what they found were two umbrellas and a hat that were resting by a bench. The king's jacket and overcoat were floating in the water. And eventually, they found the bodies of King Ludwig II and Gudin, the psychiatrist. Interesting story. To this day, they really don't know who killed them, because they do feel it was murder. Well, as you know, history has fascinating tales, and maybe one day they'll find the answer. But St. Paddy's is coming up. So let me give you this wonderful recipe for beer braised corned beef with cabbage and carrots. And this is a spicy mustard-spiked beer. And don't worry about alcohol, because the alcohol goes out of it. What you're going to need is a tablespoon of oil, 4 pounds of corned beef brisket, 2 bottles of beer. And dark beer will have a little bit of a flavor than your lighter beer. You need 4 tablespoons of spicy brown mustard, 2 cloves of garlic crushed, a head of green cabbage, about 1.5 pounds. You want to cut it into slices. Core it, of course. You need a package of mini-peeled carrots, or just use your regular raw carrots and peel them. Cut them up about a pound's worth, and you're going to need 3 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, 1 tablespoon of chopped parsley, fresh for a little decoration of the dish. Now, this is how simple it is. You're going to heat your oil in a nice heavy pot over medium-high heat, put your beef in, cook it turning once until it's browned, about 5 minutes per side. Meanwhile, what you want to do is take your beer, while that's browning, and your 2 tablespoons of mustard. You want to combine that, and when the beef is browned, you put your beer, garlic, spice packet from the corned beef, if it's included in the package, and enough water to cover. Bring it to a boil, reduce the heat to medium-low, cover, and simmer until tender, about 3 hours. Now, you could do this in a crock pot. Brown your beef, though, first. Put it in your crock pot, add your liquid. You know, put your cabbage, put your carrots in, if you got one of those nice big crock pots, put it all in there and just put it on low, let it go, and forget it. You can let that cook all day long. Now, what you want to do is when your beef is all cooked, you want to take 1.5 cups of your cooking liquid, put it in a small pot, and then just let the veggies cook in that if you want, or I recommend just putting it all in one pot if you're going to use the crock pot. And then you can add into the liquid your flour and just whisk it with the additional mustard, 2 tablespoons of mustard. Bring it to a boil. It'll thicken. It'll take about 5 minutes, and you serve that luscious broth with your corned beef and cabbage and carrots. Yum. Good stuff. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. You enjoy yourself today, and whatever you do, remember, you are very important as an individual, and I'm so delighted we were able to share time together. Take good care of yourself, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.